Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Winter Federal.
Swammerheist.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million shekels.
Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Tribe.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor 42 for Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Guss, here to talk about week 2, another really fun week. You know it's a good season of Survivor when you're like desperately invested in the characters to the point where like I'm screaming at the TV hoping Marianne doesn't go home, obviously. But then I also feel really sad for Mariah, and she seemed really nice, and I feel really bad that I'm like rooting against her when she has this like really sad story. So I pretty much would have been upset for anyone to go. So that means it's a great season. So to talk about it, I want to welcome in someone who I know is hyped about this season. He's an Australian Survivor All-Star, super fan, analyst. He is a cockroach of this podcast because he knows I will forever have him back. Please welcome Dirty Harry Hills. Harry, thank you for being here.
I love your intro. They're getting more and more hyped the more that I come on. Is that my reward for coming on?
Every time you come on, I will add something else, much like your many nicknames. I'm sure I can find something. But I did think, I was like, you are a cockroach of this podcast because, you know, you're always here. You're a regular. And that's how I'd have it, you know?
You can't get rid of me.
Exactly. Wouldn't want to, but that's my point.
So eventually we're just going to get this intro where it just becomes like 2 minutes of just like dialogue.
Well, what are the nicknames? We had the cockroach, I worked in Dirty Harry. Am I done? Is that it? It felt like a lot of the time.
I actually really enjoyed Ross and Simon calling me Hurricane Harry.
Hurricane Harry, all right.
Because I always felt like that was more fitting at the time than Dirty Harry. Like, I didn't feel like I was, like,
dirty.
That villainous.
Yeah.
It was more just
I'm pretty clean.
Pure chaotic energy all the time.
Okay, so next time I'll work in Hurricane Harry and maybe I'll take out Dirty Harry. Okay, so now I have to have you back.
Lovely.
So you'd better do well in this podcast.
Yeah, a bit of variety. Yeah, all right, I got to perform now.
Yeah, so we can, you know, change over the nicknames. Well, Harry, firstly, Hurricane Harry. I'm going to call you that all podcast now because that's what you want.
Yes.
Firstly, how are you? How's it going? Again, spoke to you fairly recently in the last US Survivor season because you come on the podcast all the time. But how have those last few months been with Perth, you know, kind of locked away from the world and now I think more connecting to society?
Yeah, you know, it's been good. It's been very busy and it's been an interesting thing for Perth and West Australia opening, but I feel like it's quite safe. We've sort of got a lot of people vaccinated. I've been at work the whole time regardless, and we've got a heap of Survivor on our screen, so there's a lot of entertainment going around.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a lot of Survivor. 3 times a week, which, you know, it was for a while. It was 3 times of Australian Survivor a week, and then it went to 2 times, and now we're back, obviously, with US Survivor. We were talking a little bit off-air, and, like, I know that you found the Australian one a little bit more of a slog, but you're, like, hyped up for season 42. So, like, what are you loving about the season?
Oh, I'm so hyped for 42. I think, number one, the cast is incredible, and I think whoever is doing casting right now deserves a pat on the back because I think they're pushing this entire thing. Like, I think regardless of where twists go or where the events go, I think this cast is going to bring an amazing season regardless. On top of that, like, you've got clean confessionals, you've got a little bit of like the backstories now kind of stolen from Australian Survivor style, and I like that they're doing that, but it's efficient, and then they get back to it. So I think they've kind of taken small positives out of other forms of Survivor and they're now just making this new little bit evolved product.
I mean, I was like nervous in the challenge. Like, I don't know what tribe I wanted to go to tribal council. I was very nervous for a couple of these tribes to go to tribal council because I felt like I liked so many people who could be on the block. I've spent 2 hours with these people. I shouldn't be that connected to them. But that is
but
how
the
I felt.
Edit was great as well. The edit was fantastic. We got to see every single tribe and that there was a bit of drama around the vote before we got to that challenge, which was amazing. And on top of that, the cast is so good that I don't want people to go home.
I know. I genuinely said on Twitter, like, Edge of Extinction. Let's put the cast on an island. Because that's the thing
just get them all.
I know, I have infinite
retries. We just want to watch them all for 26 days.
I love how I, like, campaign against Edge of Extinction until it's like, oh, but I like these people. Let's just sell out all my values so I can spend more time. Because God forbid Marianne goes second. Like, I'm getting another 12 episodes with her. I insist on it. No, obviously, no Edge of Extinction that we want. No. But I want to spend time with these players. And I just genuinely think that the way that the story is being told, I love it. Like, to get invested in the characters, to me, is the whole point, because it gives weight to the strategy, because it gives meaning to the moves, which is obviously what we're here to analyze. But it means nothing if you don't kind of know the people. And I think that in terms of what production can control, they spend so much time trying to control the action. Let's put in twists to make sure it's not a pagonging. Let's, like, try and change the, you know, moves and actually, like, that's why all twists exist, right? To make sure it's not like a standard fare of gameplay.
You switch the game around.
Exactly. But the one thing that production can control is just cast really compelling people, because then even if it's a little rote, even if it's a little down the line, think about, like, Kasaya dominating Panama. Like, it was a pagonging, but we liked hanging out with Kasaya. They were lucky Kasaya won that battle, because Lamina were really boring. But ideally, if you cast really interesting people, then no matter what's going on, you'll enjoy spending time with them. You'll enjoy learning about their stories, and that's the formula for the season. So that's why we always talk about casting being the most significant thing. And that's why I think if they just focus on that as, like, the primary thing that's important, they don't need to worry so much about shaking up the game, because the show itself and the product will always be engaging, I think.
Yes, it's huge. And it's not only cast members that are willing to play, it's ones that are actually willing to open up and be vulnerable. And I think that's a big thing about this group, is they are people that are being very vulnerable and opening up to each other, which is not something that everyone does. Some people are a bit standoffish, but this whole cast seems to really open up to each other. The people that are saying, I love you, after, like, day five, which is, it's an intense thing. And I don't actually doubt that as well. I think it is genuine for a lot of them.
Mm. Stephen was saying on Old Alls that wasn't how it was done in his day. And, like, his day was 2015. So, like, you know, Cambodia wasn't a long time ago. I want to get your perspective on it, because I'm wondering if COVID somehow kind of triggers that a little bit, because we've all been through this, like, worldwide trauma, because, you know, for example, Mariah's, like, horrible story, but we all are connected by this, like, really deep thing, and everyone's story of COVID probably is a little vulnerable in and of itself. And that's, like, the first thing of, like, how have you been over the last couple of years? So did you feel that vulnerability in your seasons, or do you think maybe every cast is different, or do you see that maybe COVID could be part of that?
I'm a not so good person to ask, because obviously I lied a lot the first time.
You were very open, but it was all a lie.
Yeah. And it's like, I was kind of looking for that in others. It was like a very much like a strategy thing to look for that in others. And I did find it. Like, I got that out of Sarah. Sammy and myself were very close. Like, it was very early on. We were sort of divulging quite honest things that we might not have been divulging to the cameras. And other people like Maddie, Baden, we all had sort of very honest conversations about certain things in our social life around the fire. So, I mean, to me, looking back on my experience, the first 2 weeks of all my survival was the most intense. Like, you just really feel that bonding, because it's that bonding through difficulty and you sort of going through these painful experiences together. And I think that brings humans together. So not having any sort of rice or real stable food source, having your flint taken away all the time, it's magnified even more, which I think is bringing these casts closer together.
Mm. I also would think for Taku, like, having gone through Jackson having to leave and the shock of that, like, it was shocking for us as an audience, but to connect with this person and to have him taken from the game in, like, such surprising circumstances, to be left as a five, like, you would think, like, okay, well, we have to do this now for each other. We have to be a family. We can't lose again. Like, we're already on the back foot. Like, I would be sure that that would bond them even more. And, like, looking at this tribal council, like, I think what was hard about the vote was that it did probably look difficult either way. Like, they seem to, like, even though Marianne, like, maybe comes with, like, what they see as some challenges, like, they also really seem to love and enjoy her. And then Mariah, they seem to really enjoy as well. So I could see that wrestle. Like, if we're going to talk about the decision between Mariah and Marianne, like, I think they were struggling with it because they honestly did feel like a family. And often you roll your eyes when people say that on day five, but, like, I could actually sense that closeness from them.
No, and it's something that is really hard to actually explain to people that don't go through that, because it really is the difficulty of it that really puts you together. And it's like, they're the only people you're talking to and they're brand new. And it's sort of this very intense experience you don't get anywhere else, where you can sort of talk through your issues and things like that. And you kind of have all that downtime where it is sort of like group therapy and that sort of thing, but to also support each other through the like tough times. Like, you've got people crying and other people supporting them. And that's a big thing.
Mm, yeah. I mean, look, loving the stories, loving the characters and relationships. I'll say as well, got to say every week, if this is Edit Watch, which we've been doing like for the negative Australian Survivor, we have to get on Edit Watch every week and be like, this person got 17 confessionals after 9 episodes of having 0. Legitimately, those are pretty much the stats. I'm not being hyperbolic. And now, yeah, like, the only two people in this whole episode who didn't get confessionals were Lydia and Roxroy. Lydia got like the challenge focus. Roxroy had a bit in the secret scenes. The fewest of the whole cast is 3 confessionals in 2 episodes, maximum 10. So everyone's sitting in that really comfortable like 7 confessional range. Like, no wonder we feel like we know them. Like, we actually do.
Yeah. And I feel like you do kind of, at the very least, you got the vibe. Like, if you needed to explain each person to someone, you probably could. Like, you wouldn't know their full backstory, but you're like, oh, like, that's like this person, like this guy's the vegan and he struggled with sort of morally sort of looking at seafood as if it's, whether it's nutrition or whether it's a morally difficult thing. And you can explain that. And just to have that little bit of identity to each person makes any vote out way more significant as a viewer.
Mm. I mean, yeah, I definitely did this week with like Mariah's story as well. I felt so bad. Like, I was like, my focus had to be on Marianne because I love, I talked about it last week. Yeah. And I talked about like how literally it was so meaningful to me to see someone just like being exactly who they are. She's like the most lovable person, which probably was a factor in saving her, which we'll talk about. So I'm like screaming, like, not Marianne. I will not watch again if Marianne goes. I'm out. And then my friends who I'm watching with are like, but Mariah has this like devastating story. I'm like, yeah, I hate to root against that. I feel like the worst person alive. She also seems lovely, but like
it just proves how brutal.
Yeah,
this game is so brutal because it's like they all know that as well. Like, they've just heard her story and how like she's sort of not just playing for herself. She kind of like wants to have this experience, and like she's lost her brother, and so to just completely sort of go over that and think about your own game is really rough. And to do it early on as well is, it's just a savage thing, but it's what you have to do.
I mean, a lot of heavy stuff, but like, again, really worthwhile stories. And I'm glad, like with Jackson, for example, before Jackson left, we get that story. Same thing with Mariah. Like, she leaves her impact out there on the island. We have to talk about the highlight of the episode, which I think is like consensus, like shipping Marianne and Zach. I'm not sure if there's like a couple name yet. I don't know what, like Zachianne? Mary Zach? Mm. I don't know. I don't have a lot to this.
Can we talk about how Zach is sort of a real, like, the only negative I can think of is that he got voted out first
because
he was the guy who
called us out, Harry.
Preseason. I'm just like, oh God, we have failed him.
I know. Well, that's a really good point because I talked about it last week about like how he like said he listened to the podcast. I have had a couple of other people reach out and say they were listening. So hopefully, like, Omar, Daniel, you guys are going to do well. But
yeah,
for Zach, that was upsetting. But he did specifically also call out our podcast Together. And it's a podcast on The Social Game that I go back to all the time because I feel like I learned so much in it. And now I'm doubting not just me, but also you. So maybe you shouldn't be invited back all the time.
But hey, if he's got love out of this, then he's still a winner.
That's true. All right. So it's not that we are failures as analysts. It's more that he'll get something out. He'll get Marianne, the biggest prize of all. Like, are you joking? You're welcome back. Like, he went out as a Survivor. This was the whole plan all along. We wanted you to get in this position. Maybe you'll meet Marianne either at Ponderosa, or hopefully she wins. She reaches out after the show. And like that, we were Cupid. We were.
Yeah, we'll start a matchmaker podcast after this.
We are failures as Survivor analysts, and now we have a matchmaking podcast. We have gone to our true calling.
Swapping reality.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, we're now the dating experts on Married at First Sight now that, you know, that's what anyone can talk about anyway. So to put the strategy hat back on, to turn away from love, my first thought was, we've heard crazier things on the mat than things like Zach is like every type of white boy that I'm usually interested in. Like, I'm like, flashback next week. Maybe Mike finally says we are advantage, talks about soccer. We hear the potato phrase, which it seems like might come from Ika. I actually do see that Marianne's going to find something. What if the flashback is that the Zach quote was the beware phrase? She found the beware idol She, ooh. This is the, and then she, now she's had to make up a crush on Zach and she really has to sell it because otherwise this would make no sense. What if it was like, just so you have a crush on anyone from the game? That's the phrase. That's the, that's
would
the task.
The producers make that phrase though? Even that is too ridiculous. But what would the phrase be? My kind of white boy is the phrase that you have to say.
Yeah. You have to choose a white boy. It's a pretty limited run of the season.
And you say, that's my kind of white boy.
Yeah, that's my kind of white. That's my kind of white boy. Yeah. Do you think that that's my tinfoil hat theory? Because then it would be like she does. So she doesn't have a crush on Zach, but then she's selling it. Like, this would be the greatest flashback.
She could be building as well. And I think this is the difference versus 41. This cast seems to be a lot more outside the box. And so I would not be surprised if someone did come at it with that sort of strategy where you say something weird that could maybe be the setup for your sort of phrase next time rather than just diving straight into the most obvious thing in the world. You've said the weirdest phrase. What, like, didn't Xander say it like four tribal things in a row or something like that? Like four challenges in a row. So I really like that, you know, Mike's got his sort of things going on and, like, Daniel's almost trying to control it. But at the same time, it kind of helps Mike because he's not just saying it every single time blatantly. And I wouldn't be surprised if someone else did do something like a setup. I'm very intrigued by how they're actually going to be different to 41 in this manner.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely talk about that because, again, they are like these sister seasons that one can't exist without the other. So we're going to talk about like the way 41 and 42 are going forward. But, yeah, I mean, without thinking, okay, the producers have made my kind of white boy a beware phrase, I don't think this is what happened. It really is a joke. But there could be something that is, I found a beware advantage. I'm not going to say it yet, but I'm going to say something else that's so absurd on the mat that no one even flinches when I say something else ridiculous next week, something unrelated, but everyone's still thinking, like, remember when she said she had a crush on Zach and, like, that's the focus? Like, there might actually be something there. That's not obviously what this is, but, like, in terms of future strategies, like, yeah, go out, talk about your crush, you know, pull the focus, make it be this, like, crazy thing, and then when you have a beware thing, like, no one cares anymore because that's just who you are. Apparently for Xander, like, when every single person was asked about Xander's beware phrase through every exit of the pre-merger 41, it was like, well, did you think that was weird? And they're like, no, because that's just really how Xander talks. Like, you want to be that kind of person who's kind of a little left of center, who's a little bit kind of vague or strange or just, you know, saying some weird stuff. And then people don't think anything of it. So, yeah, be a little weird is my new strategy to give to people.
Hashtag let's get weird.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we give in dating, in strategy. That's the kind of advice that we're trying to give.
Yes. Yeah. But no, that is true. Like, sort of really, it's just sort of like washing things out so that nothing seems suspicious if everything seems suspicious.
Yeah. Just be weird all the time.
So you can kind of do that. That's what you can do with other things. Like, if you have certain behaviors where you could be looking for an idol, but day after day you turn back up with firewood or coconuts or whatever, then all of a sudden, like, on the fifth or sixth day, you can give that extra half hour to looking for an idol and you can kind of build that way so that your behaviors aren't suspicious instead of immediately doing suspicious things like getting caught looking around that you're not holding anything, which is a classic problem for people in the first couple of days of Survivor.
It's interesting that you say that because I was thinking when Omar was giving, again, we'll talk about it, but his beautiful story about, you know, being Muslim and what it means to him. And he's like, I have to go pray. I'm not looking for idols. I'm like, this is the perfect setup to go look for idols. Like, Omar, go do it. Like, yeah, they don't know how long it takes to pray. Like, take that extra 10.
On the beach.
Well, take the long way, you know, like, go get in your thoughts afterwards.
I think he was very smart about it in making it. Like, again, you can make it like that because all you have to do is go down the beach and sort of do it there and then you build that up for a little while and then maybe a couple of days in you start taking the jungle path back to camp instead of the beach the whole way down. And then you've got, you know, you can take a look through things quickly as long as it's not suspicious. I think those sort of patterns are very smart. You sort of like build up expected patterns and things like that, and then you just kind of lean into the more suspicious stuff once you've sort of built an excuse around it.
Yeah, I mean, some people might say, like, hey, don't do that. Like, don't use your religion for strategic gain. And to that, I would say, like, look at how all of these values are inhibiting factors. Like, Omar comes out and, like, he has a really accepting, embracing tribe, which is great. But he's scared about the way that he's going to be perceived. He's, like, othered in some way. He's not kind of part of the collective. And he has to deal with that and approach it and, like, explain his cultural norms to other people. That's a factor, like, not a hurdle, but something that he's dealing with. Why not also... like, let it be an advantage to you where you get a little bit more idol finding time. I think that's great. Like, you can see for high, like, the vegetarianism thing, the veganism thing is really difficult to his game. It's an inhibiting factor. Like, if he could find some way that that helps his game, like, I think people should use that. So when Omar was like, I'm not looking for idols, I was like, that's the perfect thing you would say if you were actually looking for idols.
Not looking for idols.
Exactly. No, but we'll talk about the Abrahamic Alliance because I feel like they were a big part. And definitely, like, in my viewing party, when Lindsay said she was Jewish, we're like, woo, I'll trademark Jew. Yeah. And Zach was also Jewish. We always get Jews on the season. Like, we had a lot of Jews on Survivor.
It was so funny, like, her just line about being like, I'm not a very good Jew. And it's just like, I laughed at that. and John being a different religion as well, I like that it's such a mixed bag. And the biggest thing for me from that whole scene, like, I loved how open everyone was. But the biggest thing to me that I, like, just immediately my eyes lit up, Marianne goes away, comes back a small bit later, and she's made a praying mat.
So beautiful.
I'm like, that is social game. That is so strong. Like, you're literally taking the thing that he's just been so vulnerable about, and you've not just said words, like, because words are just words, especially when you haven't voted yet. But she's delivered something that just sort of says, like, I support you. And that's gigantic. Like, 5 days into a game, that was impressive. I love that. And I don't even know if she did it on purpose or if she's just that kind of person, but it probably went a long way to helping her stay in.
I get the feeling that that's Marianne, and that does personify all the reasons you keep her. The first thing being, she worked seemingly very fast on creating that. So she's got a good work ethic. She's got a strong work ethic. She does things fast. She's kind. And, like, they all seem to be honestly really kind and open on that tribe and largely across the season. But, like, to really just, like, have that emotional awareness and that intuition to do something like that that's so strong and so thoughtful, as you said, in action, and to do it so fast in work, I feel like that does kind of personify all the reasons they might want to keep Marianne. It's also such a lovable thing. My favorite thing from that scene, Jonathan seems so lovely. I'm going to sing his praises all podcast. He is the center of that tribe, the heart of the tribe, as he was described in a secret scene. But when he's like, if you ever want to know anything about Christianity, I'm like, Jonathan, as a non-Christian, let me tell you, we can't stop passively learning about Christianity, even when we don't want to. It is, like, it's impossible to
get away from. We already
know, John. Yeah, we got it. Don't worry about it. Yeah, it's part of existence, but I thought that was really funny. But you mentioned kind of the parallels between last season and this season. Like, what's jumping out to you? Because last week I said that you know, how similar it was, I wasn't kind of enjoying that. It felt a little lazy to me. I felt like a little done. I've already done these podcasts. I enjoyed it more this week. So, like, what have you been thinking about the many parallels we've been seeing?
Well, I guess this is always the thing that people, like, Survivor fans talk about, is, like, there's always, you know, that dream of what would happen if you put the exact same contestants into a season. And this is kind of like a different
opposite
version of that, where it's like
different contestants, like, in the same season.
Yeah, like, what if you have the exact same game but different people, and just sort of see how it works for different people. And they sort of had the twist where it's like, if you look back and really use a magnifying glass, you can sort of see how they slightly altered it so that they'd get a different experience, like with the triangles and that kind of challenge, how it was sort of weighted a bit more that way so they'd give it a go. But I've really enjoyed the twist, twist that had the three people. What was it? Hyre, Drea, and Lindsay.
The amulet,
got an advantage. Mm. And I liked that. And I enjoyed this episode especially. I liked that it was more camp things. And they do still have the twist. They've got the shot in the dark, which has been used successfully twice. They're trying to strategy. They gave it their best. But, yeah, 1 in 6, I don't like those odds. But also the strategizing around it seems to be much more active, or at least shown on the screen to be much more active. They're really trying to avoid people playing it. Obviously,
and
not
failing.
Successful.
Failing miserably.
In either case, they really didn't hide And I think that's really what happens if you only make it a sort of 50-50 option. Like they only had Marianne and Mariah as the sort of options there. And once you start doing that, you really kind of streamline the variables and the percentages of like what can happen. And so like it's absolutely the right play to just play a shot in the dark if you think it's a 50-50 thing, because the whole tribe is either going to vote like one of you or the other. So you might as well just not even bother voting.
Yeah. So what's interesting me is that last season, I felt like from what we saw, there were these like really core structures to all three of the tribes. It was like this fast paced game that became more and more apparent that there wasn't going to be a swap. I don't know about this season, but what we saw from the very beginning is there was like the central member of each tribe. We had Shan, we had Deshaun, and we had Evie, who had like a pair, maybe, you know, like Rokad, seemingly like a Danny, maybe like a Liana, or maybe Tiffany. But that's how it felt to us. It was like that pair is controlling things and wielding, especially the central player, like wielding that power to break down the tribe in the votes to the point where, I mean, Luvu never went to tribal council, but the point should be that if we do, you know, go back to all the tribal councils and get down to like a Malcolm and Denise thing, I will be in that spot. I'm not going home. I'm at the center of this. So it was quite dynamic the way that those tribes were wielding those structures. Like, you know, you, someone like Shan had to be working with everyone. So it really was like blindsiding people. It wasn't like these core groups kind of picking off people on the bottom. This season, those structures seem to be more diverse. We've got the pair structure that we haven't seen play out on Vati. Ike is a hot mess, but even last season, they even last week, they had, you know, just like Zach and Tori being like the clear outsiders who might have wanted to play their shot in the dark. Zach did. And this group as well on Taku, like they have their clear top three and then two people on the bottom who might want to play their shot in the dark. So just the way that the structures have played out really differently, like it's much more diverse. It's actually kind of strange how much we could draw those parallels between the tribes last season. And I think that went a long way to engineering blindsides, like pure blindsides, not just like you're one of two. That meant people didn't play the shot in the dark until the non-merge, in which case it went poorly. People blamed it on Sydney going home, and then it just had a really bad reputation. So I think maybe those structures are kind of leaning to why more shot in the darks are being played. And I do find that really interesting, like seeing those different structures and then seeing two shot in the darks played two episodes in when we got one the entire last season. Like that is different to me and interesting, like that manifestation.
And then really having that correct read on it, that it's a lot of heat coming for them. These dynamics have been fascinating though. It's been really cool to see very different sort of tribe strategy and seeing how it sort of plays out. Like you said, Ike is a mess and I love that. But I also love that you have Vardy that's like a knife's edge which way it could go. And then Taku that does have a quite straightforward dynamic. But then you love all of them. So it's almost like getting your heart broken each time they have to go to tribal council. So it's very like each episode is going to feel very different, which I love. And like I can't get over how good the cast is and how refreshing it feels on every level.
Yeah, I really felt that this week. I think without Shipwheel Island, that to me is maybe the repeat mechanism I'm most exhausted by. The Beware thing, we see Daniel doing different things with it. Shot in the Dark, that's just a mechanism to me. Like, I don't mind them repeating that. I wouldn't be surprised if that's just part of the show forever now. And I still think that there are interesting things around Shot in the Dark to talk about every week, which we will as well this week. And we saw that be a big factor again. So I don't mind those things. I'm definitely more on board with the parallels. I just feel like Shipwheel Island for me, I can't walk up that hill again. I know I'm not actually doing it. I don't want to watch them walk up the hill again. Like Gabby had some good stuff about that on the recap last week. Like I'm tired watching them do the summit again every week.
My favorite thing about this season is it still just comes back to the basics as well. You've got people that are playing amazing social game and it's paying off for them. You've got people that are obviously very, very strategic and it's playing off for them. Like we're looking at the Daniel and Mike sort of dynamic, and it's really, really interesting that Daniel's managed to sort of see this opportunity. You can see how happy he is just to get some sort of twist, and he's fully recognized how to break the twist as well. Like he's fully recognized how you can do it. You just convince them that it's not in their best interest to do it, and then anytime you go to a tribal council, you know that they're not going to have a vote, so you could throw them under the bus at the last second, or you can really just control the numbers yourself. It doesn't take a lot to get a majority if that's the case.
Yeah, and what's fun about that is that we had a whole season of Aware Advantages, and I don't feel even in analysis that we were approaching it that way. Like, we didn't have it. We had people who told people. We had Xander tell Evie, and that's not the way that we saw Evie go with it. You know, we saw it, nothing stayed secret. I mean, the Seers did, but we saw Shan kind of steal it from Jeannie. And, you know, like one of many kind of like advantage stealing things. But we didn't see someone like this with Daniel, which I really loved his comment about, like, I have all of the knowledge with none of the bounty. And we said at the time last season, like, Jeannie should be happy when Brad found it. She was upset. She's like, I don't have the thing. It's like, no, the best position to be in is to not have that bounty or that lack of vote, but to have the knowledge. And the fact that Daniel is inherently aware of it, hasn't had the season of analysis, just like numerically knows what's right, knows that this is the advantage, doesn't want the bounty, sees it as a negative, which it is. I've been screaming. It's like, it's more beware than advantage for a season. And he sees that. And I loved that just like inherent knowledge and awareness from him. And I'm pretty sure he listens to the podcast. So it's not just dating advice. And he can give good ideas.
And the thing that makes it even more interesting is there's another layer to this. And the thing about Daniel is he knows about this and he thinks that he can control the entire agenda, but he doesn't know that he was the only one told. And I think that is a very, very interesting twist to it. Mike being not the best strategist. He's lovely and amazing, and I love him as a character, but it's not smart to tell everyone about your beware thing. And he tells Jenny as well. But Jenny is really smart and really a numbers person, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see whether Jenny can kind of push it back again, because that's the one variable Daniel doesn't know about. He thinks that he's the one with all the cards, but there is Jenny just sort of like over on the side of the table with her own sort of agenda, and I'd be very fascinated to see what happens with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I wanted to talk about, because I feel like there is a line in Modern Survivor said by everyone. It's said by Sandra and, like, Echo throughout this whole season of Australian Survivor. It was said on Know It Alls that I just listened to. Don't tell anyone about your idol. Like, you never want to tell anyone that you have anything. And I can see parts of that because the idol, especially, like, the current idols in US Survivor, like, they expose you, they make you more vulnerable. Like, now you're telling people, not only do I have this thing that makes me threatening, but I'm also, like, a wide-open target. But that makes you rely on them more. I think, don't agree that, A, that there's, like, you never do anything ever in Survivor. Like, even for all, like, the optimal strategies that we talk about, like, I believe that there really is, like, probably a pathway that necessitates any kind of strategy, because it's all based on the people and the dynamics. So I think going in with a never do anything line for me is too much. And I also, like, I don't think that, I mean, like, okay, so he was wrong to tell Daniel, right? His read on Daniel is wrong. Daniel wants to use it for personal gain. But, like, if you tell the right person with the right read who can help you, especially when you do need help because you've lost your vote, does anyone have a problem with him telling Jenny? Jenny, who we don't know enough about the dynamic, but he's been told to us as her partner, as you're saying, she's super smart. She's someone who I think could actually help him. And I don't have any problem with him telling her. I don't, like, for me, it's don't ever tell anyone. I think it can be used again. I think there's pros and cons to the thing. I think it's becoming more and more dangerous. Daniel, read. But Jenny, like, does anyone have an issue with that at this time?
Well, I like your wording of saying optimal. Optimal is a good word, and I think optimizing is a great term for it, because you're right. Like, we shouldn't just talk in absolutes. But there should be two questions every single time you divulge something that significant, and it should be, one, how is this person intending on winning, and sort of like thinking in their mindset, and two, is there anything you truly gain by telling them in the long term? And I think if you really look at it, a lot of the time there's not a lot to be gained. I mean, you look at Drea, for example. We're sort of like going to look at the parallel between a bunch of them, but like, you look at Drea and she walks down and she's like, hey, who wants a Women's Alliance? And everyone's like, yeah, I'm down for it. What do you gain by telling them about your advantage? You've already got the majority. If they're with you, you don't gain anything. Like, you could say, oh, she gains trust. That trust is not a measurable metric. Like, you still have to wait for them to vote with you. So why not wait for them to vote with you first and then see if you do it? And if they don't vote with you, maybe you get a second chance and can use your extra vote against them. So in Drea's case, I think it was completely foolish to tell them anything, because you gain nothing. You've already got the majority if they're with you. Whereas Mike, I guess Mike is still on that. It is the knife edge tribe. and you are sort of playing to see if you can get a three to lock yourself at least into moderate safety.
Or join with another pair, because that's going to be what that tribe needs.
Get yourself
two pairs
a four, and then
they need to be the two
pairs.
Given
that you're a little bit down the road, that could be all you need is to knock off two people, and then you could be at merge or swap. So I guess you can gain, but to tell two people in a tribe of five other people just seems like a little bit too much. I probably would have waited to see what kind of happens. I actually think that Daniel's advice to him to not say anything until someone else says something is a great idea. But it's still not going to serve
him well.
Little
does he know, Marianne just said the white boy is my type thing, whatever that phrase is.
Yeah,
so
she's already said the phrase.
She's already done it.
Do they have each other's phrases on their paper?
That's a good point. Yeah, no, they would have it. Because they did last time. Yeah, so yeah.
So he should know.
The white boy phrase got said. There you go.
he's like, oh, here it goes.
See, in terms of divulging things, again, it's becoming more and more vulnerable. I see why it's trending in the way of like never tell anyone. And I always put it with Reed. And I know that's like such a cop out because just know someone's intentions, you know, but I do always say that Reed and awareness is like the skill that I would want in Survivor. That's why someone like Sandra, who I think is like the best awareness, almost pretty much probably of anyone who's ever played. That's why she's so good. And like that to me is a difference. So like they were discussing on Know-It-Alls, like Swathi goes and gives a ton of information to Tori. And, like, all of these people are giving information to Tori when Tori's been the loose cannon. So Drea firstly goes, and not just, like, she gives everything. She gives, like, I want to do a girls' alliance, which means I'm turning against what had been my allies. The older people alliance was two other men and her. So that's, like, literally turning against her allies. And I have this mechanism, which, if I was going to play devil's advocate, she's probably thinking, it's an extra vote. She also has, like, the amulet. Like, let me give them a little bit of information that's not my true power, but maybe we'll, like, give some trust. But the issue I have with what Drea did, and not with what Swathi did, because Swathi goes to Tori and then also gives so much information, like, let's turn against Drea. Everyone's giving Tori a lot at the moment. But for Drea, her read is completely wrong. Like, she is misreading Swathi and what Swathi wants to do. She, to me, still seems literally a little bit antagonistic with Tori. It has been a rough ride so far for the two of them. I, like, even when she says, I want a girls' alliance, Tori's like, is that the first you're thinking of it? And she's like, no. Like, they already, to me, seem, like, still
a little bit at odds.
Yeah. And so that's, like, she's giving that power to people who don't want the best for her. It's like, that to me is on the wrong read when you're divulging a lot. Like, it's always a risk when you do it, so you best be, like, consolidated by, like, really great awareness. Whereas Swathi, I think, is reading, to me, like, a pretty clear, again, antagonism between Drea and Tori. So to go to Tori and be like, maybe we should do Drea, and Tori seems, like, totally on board. So to me, like, you're divulging that thing. Like, every single time you divulge something, you're giving something of yourself, but she's doing it correctly for something that's received very well. So those are, like, similar moves in that they give something to Tori, but opposite moves because they're on the complete wrong and the complete right read for me.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part about that is everyone kind of looks at the bigger parts of that, but literally just for Drea to take them down to the water and be the first person to say what your intentions are is also giving away
way too much.
You should more just scope out and be like, hey, like, what are you guys thinking? Do you like the other two? Like, have you had any sort of, like, interesting chats or anything like that? And just draw for information first so you can kind of gauge whether they're just going to say yes to you or whether they really want it. Because you could just pull it around until one of them suggests, like, an all-women's alliance.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that they would have more to gain in suggesting it because Tori especially has been on the bottom. Like, Drea should be in with the guys, although we do know that she's kind of, like, wanted to go after Roxroy, and possibly that's why, you know, she is doing this, because last week, the reason she didn't go after Roxroy was she was like, well, I don't even know if I have my vote, so I'm not going to, like, really push for that. Then she does have a vote. She has two votes, and she's probably a little bit like, ugh, I can't believe I couldn't make my move just due to, like, the fear. Well, now I'm going to do what I want, and that's going to be taking out Roxroy. But I feel like everything with Drea, like, last season I said that Xander was the dress, you know, like, there's a dress, blue and white, or gold and whatever, I don't know, whatever the dress, you know, like the great, like, the question of all time. Xander, you know, being a good player who was holding on to his idol versus, like, a goat who no one kind of saw as, like, a serious candidate with his idol, and why wasn't he being voted for? Like, that was, to me, the dress of that season. To me, for the first two episodes of this season, Drea being a good player is the dress, because she like won the fishy last week. Haley gave her 3 cheesy points. Even this week, I felt like on Nodals, Rob and Steven weren't like so anti. But for me, for Drea again, I'm like, this girl is playing at 100 all the time. It's so strong. In this week alone, without even going to Tribal Council, she turned on a whole alliance. She gave so much away. And she was immediately, like, not received well. Like, I feel like Drea is just... I mean, maybe it'll go a different way, but I've never seen someone push so hard. And I'm just not on board with the decisions at this point.
Yeah, I don't think you need to. Once you start collecting an advantage, like, in terms of, like, resume and things like that and control, like, you can already say you voted successfully for Zach. You weren't a target. You've got 2 advantages that no one knows about. You've got a lead over your tribe. So then you can just sort of start to build. And to me, this is a building phase. You probably shouldn't be going on the super offensive. Yeah. But yeah, everything's interesting because it is so different to Australian Survivor and what I've experienced. Like, I mean, I've played a 50-day game and they're playing 26 with unknown advantages and like Jeff telling them that all this crazy stuff's coming at them. So you really probably do want to be on the front foot. Like, I like the idea of the players being on the front foot, but I don't know if you want to be going into conversations giving stuff first. I would always want to scope out the other person and see how they intend on winning and whether you can be a part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, look, Drea's game would not be good for Australian Survivor or even a 39-day game. And but that's what I said last week, like, even 26 days is too long for Drea. Like, they would need to be a 2-day, like, LRG for me. And then she's won because she's picked up every single advantage. She's already, like, you know, she's won the game. We haven't even blinked yet. But I feel like even 26 days is too long when in 5 days you've, like, made a massive alliance, turned on that alliance, like, got 2 advantages, told people who don't trust you about those advantages. People are already talking about you, like... It didn't need to be so divisive. Like, if she does win, she will be juggling to the end. Like, it'll never be straightforward. And I will enjoy watching that. I just feel like that, to me, is it's way too... She's playing still way too
it's
hard
just
for
eager.
Me.
It's just messy, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we agree, Drea, but I think, Mike, we're a little bit split. I'm not the biggest fan of how he played it.
Oh, no, definitely not. Okay, no, but I mean, like, look, he definitely shouldn't have told Daniel, but then again, that's on the read for me. Like, again, like, you tell Jenny, I think Jenny's receiving him well. We didn't get to hear about it, but they've been the pair. So for that, again, that's divulging with the right read. Good, she'll help you. She's smart. You need her. Like, clearly he needs her. He's lost that idol, like, 15 times even just to look for it. He needs someone. But
which was amazing TV.
Incredible, and it seems like it's going to happen again next week, like, for sure. But the read on Daniel is wrong. Like, Daniel's closer with Chanel. Daniel wants to use it to advantage them, even if it does end up helping Mike, because, yeah, do you really want to be talking about soccer this early? It didn't work out so well for Xander. I get that. But even if it advantages Mike, that's not Daniel's intention. So it's on the wrong read for me. So, like, I mean, I'm not going to, like, sit here and, like, defend what Mike did. I just think that, like, to say you never tell anyone about your idol, I can't back that as, like, a statement.
Yeah. All right, well, I give it the caveat that you need to think about
and that's the
whether you gain anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, though, all the thing, I think, I feel like all of the specific questions you're giving is what should lead to the better read. So, like, yeah, how do you, it's not just like, oh, you just know this person, just have good awareness. It's like, yeah, what is this, what type of player is this person? What is their next kind of smooth or step in the game? What is my relationship with them? What is their relationship with others? Like, these are all the probably the little things you're breaking down to correctly read it, to consolidate giving that part of yourself to a person.
And future players, just saying the phrase to build trust is not a good enough reason.
Yeah,
it is not good enough. You need other reasons, like, or at least a thought out process beyond that sentence.
Yeah. Yeah, and true in love as well, would we say? Just to, you know, just when you're giving, we're not good matchmakers.
Yeah,
you need
more than trust.
Yeah, you need trust, but you need, when you're giving up, you know, parts of yourself, I don't know. I'm not a good matchmaker. I really have to stick with the survivor strategy thing. Like, I've built a career on this. I can't just go to the matchmaking thing.
Yeah, that's not, okay. We'll work on it for next time.
Thank you. Yeah, for the Hurricane Harry here to talk about dating, Tim. That's what this podcast is leading to.
Chaos dating.
We have talked a lot about the other two tribes somehow without really talking so much about Taku, who were obviously the tribe that go to tribal council. They're at the center of everything. What do you feel about these dynamics? Like, who is impressing you from this tribe?
All right. So I think that we're not being shown 100% of things, but I think it is quite easy to read how it's working. John looks like he's the center, but I don't think he's the true center. Because I think that, honestly, if you're going towards a very hectic merge and end game, you've got John, who's a massive shield, and you've got Lindsay, who looks so close to John. It is so obvious. Like, if I was on the island with them, like, they look, honestly, a little bit lovey-dovey.
That's the matchmaker in you. That's what you're...
Yeah, it looks like it. You look at, like, the group settings, you go back and look at it, and they're always sitting next to each other, and they clearly have chemistry. And then Omar's there with the same sort of thing with John. He's the sort of third man there and the third wheel, but they need him, and he's obviously in with them both as a sort of smart person. He gets along well. He's getting along well better than Mariah, and he's definitely more chill than Marianne. So I actually like Omar's position the best.
Mm. You know what the dramatic promo would be for this episode, right? Like, that's it. Summer loving. That's what this is, the whole season. It's not even just the matchmaking. Like, it's literally summer, and it seems to mostly be around romances. I don't know. Maybe Jonathan and Lindsay are just two good looking people of opposite genders who eat super straight. And like, maybe that's what that
maybe
is.
I'm looking too much into that.
No, I see it too.
Really,
I just
that's a really easy push straight in front of a bus. That is so easy if you're Omar. You're just like, I have a get out of jail free card. I can use it at any point. They're both clearly bigger targets than me. I'm just the fun guy that's wearing a weird T-shirt with an emu on it. No one look this way. Like, he has that. He literally, he's in the perfect spot in his tribe because he's not going to go unless they really get destroyed in challenges. And he has two bigger players that will get in the way that no one will go for. I mean, that everyone will go for. So he can either throw Lindsay under the bus as, like, using power couple terminology, or John is the very obvious shield. So I actually like Omar's spot the best there. I think he is running things, and I think he has the best shot of getting the furthest at the moment. He might not, but I think on paper he has the best shot of going far.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think all three of the Abrahamic Alliance did do well. I feel that I'm really impressed with Jonathan. I have to say, like, last week we talked about the secret scenes, and I couldn't give it chilly points because I'm like, well, it's not on TV, but we heard about how he was literally the heart of the tribe. We saw dynamics that ended up playing out. Jackson said in exits that he was really close with Mariah. I felt like she maybe was on the outs, and she talked about, like, kind of their different age. Well, they have the same age, but different from everyone else. And it, like, those dynamics obviously played out. But I just feel with Jonathan, firstly, just, like, what a surprise he is preseason. I mean, the fact that Omar,
to a
degree, is running things, like, we expected that. He was my winner pick. I took him as the second draft pick, I think, because we all thought he would do well. Jonathan, we did not think, had any other layers other than basically being the Aussie type. And he's been just so surprising to me. So I love that because it's so refreshing. I feel that he is so central. He obviously does have the bromance connection with Omar, you know, like the John Hennigan Christian thing, the JT Steven thing. It's a tale as old as time. We love it, of course.
Yeah. Super, super player. I think it's been very, like, I have sold him short and Lindsay short because I think they are playing amazing games as well. And I think they have the social stuff down pat. Mm. They have the strategy down pat. They both seem physical. Like, I mean, John, obviously, but I think Lindsay undercover will be a physical player if those challenges come up. And I loved every bit of what they were doing up until literally the tiny bit before voting. Like, they go to tribal council, they're talking through everything, and they're using the exact right wording. I can't remember the exact wording, but Lindsay was using things. She was saying things like, oh, I hope things go okay, or, like, very weak language, like as if she doesn't truly know what's going to happen. And she was doing that a lot in the early part of the tribal. And it's like, okay, if you're the other players there, Omar and Marianne, you're like, okay, like, maybe it's not this dynamic where, like, one or two people are in charge. But then getting towards the end of it, like, John threw out the sort of comment, what was it? He just said, like, it was basically like, we're going to vote you out and it's that simple. And I'm like, that is telling everyone that you are in charge. And that's the only sort of negative that came out of that was right towards the end, I think Jeff got out of them some terminology that they are confident and they do think that they're in charge.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the biggest miss, is that they are such a clear three, so clearly in charge, to the point where Mariah knows to play her shot in the dark, which we'll talk about. But I think a lot of that was helped by the fact that Mariah and Marianne seemed against each other. And that's what Mariah was saying in exits as well, is like, they were such a clear three, because it wasn't like it was like, okay, well, Mariah and Marianne are aligned, but they're on the bottom. Who is coming against them? Like, are they trying to pull over Lindsay maybe? Or like, Mariah said she was closest to Omar. Like, can we get a third person against maybe like the couple, quote unquote? That's not what's happening. Like, Mariah and Marianne are against each other. So they know that they're going to be the two names that are out there, so that they know that these three are in power. So maybe that kind of, you know, is some of the language. But I think that the transparency and maybe even like the softness in that transparency, and not trying to be too harsh about it, but also not trying to be too duplicitous, is probably due to those like connections, and we're talking about their closeness. And I think like everything that you can say about the cons of that, you can also attribute to like pros in like their social game. Like, I love that Lindsay seems like such an open person. It seems like she really is socially connecting. If the player with the amulet at first, who was like, I don't want to start off being duplicitous, like, that's the type of game she's trying to play. And like, I cannot knock wanting to be social and connected. I mean, I feel like she's doing it all the time. Like, even when she is talking about how much energy Marianne has, she's saying, like, oh, I could never have that energy. Like, she's putting it back on herself. Like, that's just the kind of, like, vulnerable, open, social player she is. But then I think that when you say she has, like, softer language that's not as definite, that makes it people worry at a tribal council, like, those two things probably go hand in hand.
Mm. And the comments where Marianne was being 110% are interesting, because if it comes across as like just a nothing comment to some people, but if you're a person that is being annoyed by Marianne, it gives you that opening to talk about it later and kind of complain behind her back. So it is a very interesting comment that you can throw that out, a sort of distinction between you and Marianne, but it's not an aggressive statement. It's just like an opening for someone else to come and bring that conversation to you is a pretty cool thing. And I we look at these things under a microscope, and I don't know how deliberate they are, but things like that I find very interesting language, where you can create an opening for yourself or throw another person under the bus without it being that obvious that that's what you're doing.
It honestly feels quite deliberate to me for Lindsay, but it's not deliberate in like she's choosing every word, but her approach in general and that kind of openness to me, like, feels true to who she is. But I think that it's definitely, you know, hopefully conscious, but also just like a great attribute to have in Survivor. But, you know, Mariah is the one who seemed the most irritated by Marianne and even said as much in Exit. So you're right. Maybe that's the opening. Maybe putting them against each other so clearly and just kind of feeding on that is another reason that the three get to be at the top and have like no worry that any votes are going to come against them. You know, that if, like, for example, Mariah does play a shot in the dark and gets it, then Marianne is voted against one of the three because no one else's name is coming up in this tribal council other than the two with the five first same letters that the editors can play on. There's never going to be any other of those like other names written down.
It makes the variable so easy when that happens. I mean, you're in a tribe of five and two people have just named each other. It just makes everything so easy. You know, there's no weird votes.
Mm.
You can take every single situation into account, and regardless of whether anyone plays a successful idol or advantage, you've just got the backup plan and everyone goes back to camp.
Ugh. Yeah.
I mean, depending on how it goes, you should end up with a happy camp.
I do think Jonathan honestly has done amazing. He does seem to have like the key connection with both Omar and Lindsay, and to me be in the center. But for Omar as well, I agree, doing incredibly well. We assumed he'd be running things. We assumed he'd be doing well and he'd be the kind of person who could do that. But it was probably the least telegraphed that he would fit into like with Lindsay and Jonathan. Everyone I felt could like see from the preseason, like Lindsay and Jonathan, that's a thing. But for Omar to be with them, to be connecting so well across the board, is definitely just like a great thing for him. Just some really positive things. Like Mariah said, she was closest to Omar. She says that Jonathan was really encouraging to her after she lost him the first challenge. It was generally just like amazing for the first 5 days. So just like some really positive words coming through with this three, who I do think just in connection, in power, in socialness, just doing incredibly well. But then the question becomes, what do you think was the right move as a three? I know it's probably different for all of them, and we'll talk it through individually, but when it becomes Marianne versus Mariah, which is sold to us as, like, Marianne gives the tribe life, like, she's good maybe short term, but she could maybe screw us long term, or she might be, like, kind of all over the place, whereas, like, Mariah, they're probably thinking maybe not as good as challenges, but maybe we'll be more loyal down the road. I don't know that I fully see it as much that way, but, like, where do you see it with that?
I mean, to me, I don't know if there's, like, a really clear-cut thing there. I think they've got their three, and if I'm Omar, the one thing I just want is to not have to go back as a three. That's, mm-hmm. like, the one thing I'm desperate for, and everything else doesn't really matter too much because you've got your couple of connections and they're both above you in terms of, like, threat level. Between Marianne and Mariah, I guess, to me, Marianne's really readable. Like, I mean, she's very mm-hmm. open. And so I don't know if you'd be getting tricked by her or blindsided by her anytime soon. So I would probably keep her around because of that. If there's a chance she annoys other people, when you have a tribe swap, that's just another motivation. Because you always do want to look at what motivations can you get on the table apart from people just winning. Because especially if you're on the bottom, you want to have those options of not just sort of people winning the game necessarily. Like, if you can talk to people through other motivations, whether that's being annoyed, whether that's survival, whether it's their perception on television, you do want those options available to you. So I think I'd pick Marianne to keep, just to have an extra option moving forwards. And because I think she's way more readable. I think, didn't John say that he couldn't really get a read on Mariah, like, and where her head was at?
Yeah, I think, well, Marianne, yeah, seeing her emotions, if any of that is put on, like, give her all the acting awards. I do agree with that. Because for me, so it's sold to us as, like, you know, short-term versus long-term in the two choices. But I see both of them as having possible short-term liability with long-term gain in different ways. So for Mariah, it's like short-term, you might lose the challenge, and then now you're down to three. You don't want that, but then long-term, she's going to stick with you. Because all you want short-term is just to stick together as a three and to get through this phase of the game. Marianne might help you win challenges, and she brings life to the tribe, and she's obviously, like, bringing a lot of work ethic, and they seem to just, like, you know, it's maybe a little tiring, but they enjoy being around her. But then short-term, to me, is more of a liability because she's the kind of person who's out there looking for idols. We see that she does find something which won't be activated, but she's more out there going to try and mess things up for your three, I think. If she already went to Shipwheel Island, she might have something. I think that is probably mitigated by the fact that she's that readable in her desperation that it seems like she'll probably be okay. But she's doing more things that could upset the apple cart of the three of you before emerge, I think, short term. I think long term, you'll say people might be annoyed by her, maybe in larger doses. I love Marianne more than anything in this world. But what I see, at least in small doses, is, like, when she's saying that stuff with Zach on the mat and saying how, like, she's had a rejection, 100% rejection rate, which honestly, every one of those guys is a damn fool. But they're all like, oh, and then I think even High's like, she's so cute. Like, I think people might love her. Like, I think that's why you keep her. Like, Omar says they want social and hustle. So maybe they're thinking that if they don't lose more challenges and they are two people down, but they're a very, very strong tribe in that four, if they don't lose more challenges and they go there, like, maybe she will annoy people, and she's definitely the option that is more, like, low and high. Like, there's definitely, you know, more pros and cons to her just, like, as a player because she's that more extreme option. But, like, maybe she'll annoy people and then be a target, or maybe, like, people will be charmed by her and love her and she'll be a reason that people will be brought in. Like, I feel like she offers things either as a shield or as a connecting factor. Whereas Mariah, to me, it's, like, more readable how this will go. Like, you might lose a challenge, and if you don't, she'll stick with you. Like, it's a more standard pathway. Whereas with Marianne, it's like, let's see how this goes. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, this could go really well, or maybe more poorly, but, like, let's you know, we feel pretty comfortable in our three. Let's just, like, roll the dice on it.
And I think I still like the larger range, even if it comes with danger. I think you've got options. And I think if you're a creative player, having any kind of, like, larger options is just better. You've got more fluidity to kind of make things happen and push to the end. Rigid gameplay is the one thing I don't want, or rigid ideas or that sort of thing, because that's when you just get stuck and people just say, oh, I'm sorry, you're just going home, rather than having that fluidity. You always want fluidity.
Yeah, I think as well the way it was presented to us was that Jonathan seemed the most set on Marianne, like, from the beginning. He's like, Mariah's the mom of the tribe, but I just, like, love Marianne, and who can blame him? So I feel that it was sold to us, like, he's in control and central, which I do believe he is, but, like, that's why Marianne stays. But I still think we got the reasons from Lindsay and Omar as well. Lindsay actually left. I noticed that she said, Mariah has a good argument, but I do think, and then it cut off. I'm like, well, she was going somewhere with that. So that's the first thing. We see her a lot with Mariah. That's why I kind of feel like she feels like maybe she would want Mariah just because we see them together all the time. But again, she was obviously giving out, you know, takes that we didn't get to hear. And Omar, who Mariah says she was closest with and who even says how much more he trusts Mariah. So he especially feels like he's going against his instinct. But he also says we want social and hustle. And, like, what is Marianne if not social and hustle? Like, she's going to go out there and either make friends or be the target. And, like, hustle, like, she made you a prayer mat in what seemed to us, I mean, I know it was a cut, but it seemed like she whipped that up in, like, 30 seconds. Like, the prayer mat is social and hustle personified. That is literally what they should name that prayer mat. So if that's what he wants, he got it with Marianne. So I feel like we did get it from all three why they could come to this consensus. And maybe the dynamics weren't as vague as they seemed to us, especially with seeing last week in the secret scene, Jonathan telling Omar and Marianne about Jackson looking for an idol and Jackson and Mariah being tighter and maybe being on the outs. Like, maybe those dynamics were more hierarchical between Marianne and Mariah than we got a sense of as it being like a 50-50.
Yeah, we might not be getting everything. And I think on top of that, it doesn't really seem like it's a clear-cut decision. Like, I think there's pros and cons to both.
Yeah.
And I think the only way you can really decide is in hindsight. And I think it's a bit silly to do that down the line, because right now we've got the live kind of choice, and right now it's pretty much impossible to decide whether this will be game breaking or not for the other three.
One thing that I think is interesting is the shot in the dark, because we get a lot of like how you don't want either of them to play the shot in the dark, right? That's what you
both sailed as soon as you had both of them obviously as the targets.
Right. But is that not an argument for both of them playing the shot in the dark? Or at the very least, for me, best case scenario, Marianne plays the shot in the dark. And we can talk this through, because obviously there's a lot of antisocial behavior that would have to then go into making Marianne nervous. But for me, like, worst case scenario, Mariah plays the shot in the dark and Marianne doesn't play it. Now, she might be safe, 1 in 6 chance. And you have to vote out Marianne, come back to camp with Mariah, who you try to vote out. That's not a good situation. Then if neither of them play it, which is what they're trying to gain, you've voted out Mariah. She didn't even give herself a chance, so she's out. But now Marianne still has a shot in the dark. So you really have to work hard if you're going back to tribal council, because 1 in 6 chance you're voting against the three. Like, then you're going to have to go back and make a decision where it might be Omar, it might be Lindsay, it might be Jonathan's prime connection there that's really coming out, and whoever he votes for is going to go home. So I think, you know, neither of them playing it or Marianne not playing it isn't the best thing. Then there's both of them playing it, which again gives a chance for Mariah to save herself. You come back awkwardly to camp. But if she doesn't save herself, at least Marianne doesn't have it for the next time. And then the best case scenario would be Mariah doesn't play it. She goes home, didn't even give herself a chance. But Marianne comes back to camp with nothing to save herself. But the issue with this is that it is the antisocial play where Marianne feels nervous enough to play it erroneously. But damn, like, I don't feel great about, well, she'll have no vote, it seems, from the Beware advantage, but she has an extra vote. So if she's going to play her shot in the dark, the three of them, that could be, like, the one thing that means that they aren't making it through further in the game.
Are you allowed to play your extra vote and shot in the dark at the same time, just for future
reference? I would assume
reference?
So. I've always thought, like, play your extra vote as a shot in the dark. Like, this makes sense. Just, like, you just
because that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, honestly, as soon as it's going the way it was going, where you've got that split and it's such an obvious split and you know that the people in the middle are going to vote for one of you or the other, like, your vote is no longer important at all. So you should really just be playing the shot in the dark. Like, and you can tell that to the other players. You're like, look, whether you voted with me or against me, my vote was pointless, so I might as well just take a 1 in 6 shot at an immunity. Like, there's no, like, and you're talking about trust and that sort of thing, and yes, that's kind of important, but it's like they just lied to Mariah, so it's like you're just like, well, I didn't really know, now I know, and now we built trust, so we can kind of move from here. I think I would play it, and then just kind of talk through it, because you can be very, very open and honest about the reasoning and why it makes sense.
Well, for Marianne, I mean, we spoke about it a lot last season, a lot of people whose vote was completely meaningless, not playing their shot in the dark because they wanted to build trust, especially at a first vote, like really make that social connection.
Yeah.
Marianne, I think, is even less on that. For me, it would be wanting to save my shot in the dark for the next time. Like, if you feel like really good about Mariah going, which she does, and you trust in that, then it's more about losing the opportunity for shot in the dark when you feel more at risk of going home, when it's not like 1 and 2, when it's like 1 and 1, considering that you know you're on the bottom. That would be my fear in wasting it. But then my question to you becomes, if you're in the majority, are you trying at all to get Marianne to play it so that it doesn't have a 1 in 6 shot of ruining the next one, even though that's just a 1 in 6 shot and it probably loses some social capital and it has to be like anti-social? Because what we know now of the shot in the dark from last season, and it took us like half a season to work it out, but what we think it is that there are 6 scrolls and 1 of them is safe. So Mariah and Marianne can't even have their like 1% chance of both somehow getting a 1 in 6 safe scroll. They're, only 1 of them can be safe. So if they both play it, you know that at least 1 of them is going home. And now you don't have to worry about the shot in the dark for the rest of the pre-merge. And it can't come back to like screw over the 3 of you.
Okay. So just because I'm confused, if six people all play shot in the dark in the same tribal council, 1 of them is guaranteed to get.
Yes. There's 1 safe scroll. It's not like you all have a 6 that all has a 1 and you kind of like all go on your own journey with that. The reason we think that is because I think at the merge, Jeff was like, now it's 2 of 12. And you're like, all right, so there are a certain amount of scrolls. It's not like everyone's got their own scrolls.
So they're running out. So now it's a 1 in 4 chance.
No, it should be, but it's not. I think they replenished the scrolls, but in that 1 tribal council, there's 6 scrolls.
Okay. So replenished.
It's crazy that we're still confused about that. It's been over a season, and they just have not explained shot in the dark well. But I think every time you go at this stage, there'll be 6 scrolls and 1 will be safe. So if 3 people play it, they can't all get a safe scroll somehow, like, which would be miraculous, but they all get their 1 in 6. No, like, there is only 1 scroll for all 3 people of the 6.
Okay, interesting. And then the interesting thing about that is, does it get played before an idol? So let's say you're like a minority and you've got a 3, and then you all play shot in the dark and 1 of you gets immunity. Then you can play an idol on another person and have 2 out of the 3 of you immune. I'm very interested whether that will be something that gets broken or abused in future.
The order of operations. I agree, because it's also confusing. It's just like, now will be the time to do so. And the time to do so is just like a free-for-all because there's so many things to do.
Because it always has been a free-for-all. There's never been like a sort of specific chain that they've articulated.
Yeah, it's not like a board game where it's like, this is played and then this is played and that's the way it goes. It's like, now all of you do whatever you want to do. And we've seen it actually play out where it behooves you to wait. Like, we literally saw Sarah Lucina and Jeremy be like,
in
Winners of War, because it was better to go second, get that information advantage and play accordingly, until eventually Jeremy just had to be like, all right, no, I'm not going to risk not playing it, and I'm out. It's like a game of chicken. So every single thing you do is like, are you going to risk that non-specific amount of time running out, or are you going to go first and then give that other person the information advantage? Like, really, the time to do so becomes increasingly vague and scary for the contestants.
And it could be incredibly petty as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've already played it. They've already played the shot in the dark at the voting booth, but we haven't seen how it's gone, and the idol can work around that.
Yeah, and whether you'd actually show your little thing before someone else plays an idol and things like that.
Mm. I mean, you have to show your shot in the dark because you've played it, so it's not like you might not play it. So maybe that is the first thing you do, and then the idol is after.
Yeah. Well, I guess, like, I don't think it'll happen this season, but I'm interested for in future whether people do abuse it, whether it gets really chaotic, the actual like advantages. Imagine if someone has an advantage and an idol and shot in the dark, and like things are just going haywire. I'd be fascinated to see how the actual timing of everything goes.
No, I'm interested in it as well. I just thought it was interesting that, like, so Jonathan's like, you have to lie to them, like, cut to him then like being like lying to them, which I thought, he's like, you have to tell them I'm with you, and then he's like, I'm with you.
I'm not voting
which was a great editing cut. But then Omar in the tribal council is saying how you have to lie to people so that they are blindsided. I'm like, well, now everyone should be worried. But then I'm like, well, maybe that's a good thing. Like, be worried, play your shot in the dark, get it done. Like, I actually think, I don't know, for me, if you could be as non-antisocial as possible, but get 2 people who are clearly on the bottom to burn their shot in the dark, even if it's 1 in 6 chance saves Mariah, who is your intended target, like, really, if you could get Marianne to burn it, that to me without like putting her off, if she's just paranoid, that would be ideal. But then you don't want to be the kind of allies who make an ally paranoid. You don't want her to feel that bad about it. You want her to care enough about you to want to vote with you, even when she doesn't need her vote. Like, that's a great social play. But if she plays a shot in the dark and has a 1 in 6 chance of your 3 going next time, they're going to hate that.
The rules on it are so crazy as well. Yeah. Like, imagine, because, all right, so the producers always give you an order of how you're actually voting. Like, so it can be different to what is shown on TV. It's usually in a row. And so if they put Mariah as the last person in the tribe, technically they could have the first couple of people go for the shot in the dark themselves. And could they open it? Are they allowed to open it? Because if they are allowed to open it, then that could affect how the other people choose to vote. And
they have
like
to have
that.
Some way,
like,
around it. Surely they're replenishing. Like, yeah, oh, well, there are 5 things. I'm in. I'm going to vote. Maybe the second that you open the urn, you've decided to play your shot in the dark before you see how many scrolls are in there.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, no, you don't. Random, you just put your dice in a thing. So that's it. So that's that.
All right.
But, like...
Yeah, but you can have code. You can have code for things like that that producers even couldn't pick up, potentially. All right. It's pure chaos. You can speculate on that for hours.
Yeah, but for me, what's interesting about Shot in the Dark and what continues to be interesting is, like, how much do people care about the social game, and is it more than 17%? Because we had the question last week, like, for Tori, like, should she have thrown her vote? Then she's voting for someone in the majority that's anti-social, but then she has 100% chance of, you know, if she had a 17% chance of going home, if Zach plays it and gets it, then they're all voting for her. If she's thrown her vote, then it doesn't go to a revote and she has won the day, but it's anti-social. It's the same thing with this. It's like, do you want the 17% chance next time, or are you going to really, really make Marianne feel good so she doesn't play it if you go to another tribal council? But then you're going to be antisocial. Would you care more about that relationship? And it seems that they do, or they're not thinking about it. But for me, at least I know that people care more about the social game than, like, that 17% chance. And that's good to know. Like, I've heard people be like, well, should it be a stronger chance? I don't think so, because I think the whole point is, like, it should just be a little bit to like, have that fear and paranoia, but it shouldn't be game deciding. And for me, that's actually a fairly good percentage. Yeah, I think that, like, if you're willing to ruin your social game on 70%, like, that's a choice you're making. But, like, making people ruin it on 50%, like, that's an actual choice. And I don't really want to give them that. I want them to be able to choose the social game, but still put some fear and risk in that, because that's what the shot in the dark is. It's just, like, some risk without it being, like, so extreme that you have to choose the mechanism over the relationships.
Yeah, I think it needs to be a desperation thing, because it's like those other twists we talk about, like the bucket run and the triangle puzzle challenge thing. Like, as soon as you weight it to a certain degree, people are just going to take it every time. And I think if you started to weight like a 1 in 5 or a 1 in 4 shot in the dark, like, people would just start taking it every single time.
Yeah, it should
end up with really boring things.
You should be wrestling with it. That's the point. It's like, it should be literally a shot, like a last-ditch hope and effort. It shouldn't be, like, a legitimate option that people have to, like, always be strategizing around or, like, ruining relationships for, because then it would just become, like, so integral to the game. At the moment, it has to just be something to factor in and then just work out how much that fear needs to seep into your game, or that risk needs to seep into your game, without you just playing as you would, which for you know, this tribe seems to be really social. Of course they're going to make Marianne feel good, like, really, like, consolidate something. If it was 50%, they'd really, like, if Marianne had a 50% chance of the shot in the dark next time, like, basically the 50-50 coin, or even 33% chance, they might be thinking, all right, well, we can't play that way. But this way they get to keep going in the way that they want to play and be social, but just have it hopefully be in the back of their mind. And that's probably where the shot in the dark should sit, in the back of your mind at all times.
Yeah,
like,
I
never
think
in the front.
It's in a good spot.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think so. Did you have any more on Taku? I feel like, you know, obviously they were the central tribe. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, just great job to the 3, basically, I think.
Yeah, I love the tribe, and I really like Omar, Lindsay, and John, and how they've played things so far. I think they're in a really strong position. If they can get anyone else on board, which I think they're social enough to do, I think that they're going to go pretty far.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that 3, because they're so strong. Like, if they are able to get to the merge with the 3 of them, please God, Marianne, but, like, really the 3 of them, like, I think they're in a good spot, because they'll have gone through stuff, and I think they'll be very bonded. I could see them wreaking havoc.
They're different as well. Like, they can bond with different people. Like, John is clearly going to, like, pick up any kind of alpha dude. So, like, if Roxby's around, if Mike's around, like, he's going to easily move in with them. And it's like Omar picks up different people as well. Yeah, and, like, Tori. Lindsay's going to pick up different people as well. I feel like they have so much, like, different angles they can approach people from that they really should be able to sort of work things their way. Whereas I think Ika being so messy, I don't think they'll have that kind of coherent game plan. And I think Vardy is actually probably going to be detrimental if they never get to show any kind of allegiance. Like if they go in as a six, I think they probably end up just self-destructing in a similar way to how contenders kind of self-destructed on my season because we never got a chance to make any kind of proper allegiances shown before it was too late.
I mean, Ika doesn't have a three as strong as Taku, and they never will. Like, they never could build something this strong because it's been so fractured from the get-go. So that's done in terms of strong groups. And then with Vati, they're at a six, which is good in terms of not going to tribal council. They can set up two people now and counting. I did say last week Taku would never go to tribal council, so what do I know? But they're already in pairs that apparently are quite clear. They already have some duplicity with, like, Mike and Daniel. They seem like a, you know, loving tribe. But I do think that not being able to kind of, as we've often seen with some, I mean, like, Erica wins from Luvu, but they had their chaos too. Like, not being able to kind of iron out those issues at a tribal council at the very least. Like, not being able to decide your group and having it be handed to you can often be detrimental. So if they keep winning, I do think that there could be fractures there. So I feel really, really good about the Abrahamic Alliance, which is what I will continue to call them. but for Vardy, I mean, we spoke a lot about, you know, what Daniel was doing. I felt as well for Daniel, he was, like, I loved the whole way he was in that interaction because he was, like, super supportive. He was like, oh, this is so great and, like, really positive about it while he's obviously, like, plotting for his own thing. And obviously for Mike to feel, like, good about him, like, it's the wrong read from Mike. But for Daniel to be that person for him, that was, yeah, a lot of big ticks from Daniel. He's also, like, he's got Chanel. He's consolidating that. We see him comforting High with Chanel. I feel like he felt like he was in a great spot.
Yeah, and I think plenty of people on Vardy are playing amazing. And we haven't even brought up Lydia, which is sad because it's like she had a standout episode as well. I mean, she dominated a challenge and sort of talked them through the puzzle from – they were last place, weren't they? And then she sort of got them through that puzzle super quick. So obviously, to me, winning that challenge is just pure communication. And I think if she can win that from the back – then I think she's dangerous.
I mean, there's a lot of people on this tribe. I mean, we don't know. Like, High and Lydia, we've seen less connecting as the pairs, but then some of the connecting has been explicitly negative between, like, Daniel and Mike, so who knows? For High, I really loved, you know, the veganism focus. I've been a vegetarian for 16 years. My assumption and hope would be to never eat meat, fish, or chicken again in my lifetime. So I was, like, completely empathizing on this because it's always been something I've thought about. I'll never go on Survivor in 100 years. But if I did, I've always thought, like, I could never just go on and eat meat. I feel like you have to eat meat on Survivor. Like, I don't know how people don't do that, even, like, with the rice, which he was expecting as precedent. So that is hard. But, like, I've always thought I would have to spend a couple of months weaning myself into meat because I can't just go. Like, I don't even know how he's doing that. For me, I accidentally had a bite of meat 4 years ago at an event. They were like, this is a potato. Okay, I was like, oh, cool. Bit into it, pure beef. Was talking to, like, clients, couldn't spit it out. And I genuinely still makes me feel ill to think about it. Like, I don't know how you just go from, like, not eating it to eating it. Like, I totally empathize, like, in terms of that being, like, morally, emotionally, mentally, and physically so difficult for him. Like, I felt, you know, that it was important to get that story from him.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's hard for me to identify with it because, like, I've never sort of been vegan or vegetarian or things like that. I feel like if it's for moral reasons, I feel like you can give yourself a pass. I mean, it's like you're talking about sustainable farming if you're, like, pulling crabs off a beach in Fiji. And then on top of that, it's like it's a short period in time and you're doing something that's, like, close to some people's hearts, at least. I'm not sure, like, how big on Survivor High is. I'm assuming he's a big fan. I think you can give yourself a moral pass. It's more whether feels like he can forgive himself. I think he should be able to easily do that, especially when you're put in an unknown position. Like, he didn't know there was going to be no rice. So it's not like you can even say, oh, well, he knew what he was getting into,
yeah,
because he didn't know.
That is hard. Like, that lack of 40 seasons of precedent that you'll have something. That's why we even saw him last week. He said, like, no rice. And that obviously manifested into this big thing. For me, like, the vegetarianism thing is a moral decision for me. I like the taste of meat. And even so, eating it would make me physically ill. So that's the thing for me. It's like, even if you can give yourself a mental pass, I'm sure that's still really, really difficult for him. And he's a vegan. Like, I'm just a vegetarian. I cannot imagine how difficult that was for him. And the fact that it was so important to him that his anticipation was to go out and just eat the rice, which is super, super difficult in and of itself. And he can't even do that. So yeah, I really like Hai. I want to see more of him strategically, but it's again, getting these stories that you can empathize with and everyone can kind of pull something from. Last week, I felt for Marianne really being herself. That was important to me. Hai, the veggie thing, I totally get it. And yeah, everyone kind of gets something from those stories, like what Omar's giving as well. Like, people relate to that. That's why these stories are so important. And I honestly felt like them dedicating the episode to healthcare workers was a beautiful touch. So they're just nailing it emotionally at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was just really good to hit all those notes, get to know people, like, put it into, like, perspective of people in real life watching. Like, people sort of all identify with different cultures and people and ideas, and I think that's an important part of Survivor that really needs to stay. I think it shouldn't just be strategy, even if you only have the US Survivor's runtime. I think you really need to push into those things of cultures and ideas just being put in a blender, because that's what it is.
It's so good. I mean, as well with the diversity initiative, like, that's what we are meant to be getting out of it, is these better stories, which we are. And then they have to tell those stories, which they are, which is just big ticks all around. On Ika, we kind of, you know, we're against some of what Drea was doing. Who do you like on Ika? Like, who do you think is doing well strategically? For the Mets tribe.
Romeo is the standout, because he's the guy who, he didn't quite get what he wanted last time. Like, he could have played the middle and had Zach and other people. But he's definitely the guy that no one has really brought up as being against, which is pretty important in such a small tribe. So I think he's got a lot of pros to him. Weirdly enough, Tori seems to have a lot of information come her way. I don't know why, but it seems like...
against people, all logic and sense, somehow Tori gets all the info.
She always seems to have the information, which is such a funny thing, because she seems chaotic and not necessarily the best player, but she's definitely active and pushing. So I still like her chances. And then Swati is probably the one that's been most successful, I guess you'd say. Like, she's someone that, again, hasn't really been targeted and has actually got the most information out of just about anyone. And she's not just sitting back. Like, she did say she wants to target Drea, which they should be able to pull off, depending on who they pull in. It will probably come down to who Romeo wants to go with, who could actually get the numbers.
Yeah, Romeo, I feel like, is the logical player who was just trying to maintain some of the chaos. Although I feel like Swati...
he's trying to weather the storm, like, that is Ika.
He's like, I don't think I was meant to be on Ika. Didn't you meant to put me on Taku? I'll just hang with the, you know, fun group that are being really solid. Swati's doing well too, obviously. But Swati will play, like, a little big. Like, she comes straight for Drea. But she, again, is doing that, as you said, with actual success, which is nice on Ika. They had two secret scenes, which one of them was them eating lizards, which I did not enjoy, again, as a vegetarian. But the other one was really funny. It was about them, like, quizzing Swati on what musician she knows. I am only 29, but I've never felt older in my lifetime than them quizzing this 19-year-old. They're like, do you know the Backstreet Boys? She's like, oh yeah, my mom used to listen to them. I was like, oh, just kill me right now. I'm done. I'm out.
All right. I feel old, so yeah, thank you for that.
Oh my god. Okay, anyone who is over 27, go watch that secret scene if you want to just hate yourself and feel like time has been lost to ashes. Because
Jen, they like, cry.
They
the
didn't. She didn't
day.
Know any of it. Was really sad. So there was a couple of fun secret scenes. Tori, I feel, does continue to be good value. Like, the Angelina upside to me continues to be there, even in, like, some small scenes. Like, the first scene, it's been picked up on. But, like, so last week, Zach in the exits is like, I'm really happy for Tori that it was her. Like, I had my experience and I'm grateful for it. And I'm also really happy for Tori that she got to go through. So then she's like, I was really upset for Zach. I'm like, that's so sweet. What a nice parallel. And then she's like, because it could have been me and I could have been eating. I was like, oh, Tori, that is not absolutely not where I thought I was going to go.
And it's 3 days in. You're just like, I'm so jealous. Someone else having a bed. But I do actually empathize with that, because the first 3 days are the hardest. And then your body seems to get used to it. So I definitely see where they're coming from and why it feels so hard for the first, like, 3 to 5 days.
Mm, it was just more the about face that you're like, oh, that's so nice to Zach that you're, like, thinking and caring about him.
Empathetic.
And she was like, I just was, like, really upset for Zach because of how it affected me. You're like, okay, Tori, that's great. Like, you genuinely, yeah, Tori, the longer she stays around, and it actually feels like she has enough targets around her that this might go okay. She's going to be very funny, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot there that we're getting from her. But yeah, did you have any other takes? Or should we get to the chizzy? Like, I feel like, you know, they didn't feel that strategic in episode, but I think in between, like, the shot in the dark and the dynamics, like, there's always, you know, some strategy that we glean from it. I was actually struggling with the chizzy, but I don't know if you had any other more general thoughts.
I've struggled. I will struggle to pick the chizzy. Like,
yeah.
I think that there's so many that you could justify. My only other take is that I really enjoy how many jungle moments and chill moments that they put in this episode. It is extremely rare for me to feel like it's real Survivor, like to get that vibe, like I'm out there in US or Australian Survivor. South Africa hits it sometimes, but they kind of got it a bit this episode where I was like, oh, like that's so cool. Like it kind of feels like I'm out there. Like they were talking about the jungle and all the paths that divert and a couple of other things. So yeah, I just wanted to bring up that it felt really cool just to get those very down to earth and everyday moments.
Mm. And it works as well because the cast is so relatable. I loved as well that they, again, like they have stories where hopefully people can connect to things in their own life. And I loved as well that they were like, this is not a cast that seems very comfortable out of the elements. I'm like, this is a cast after my own heart. Like it's not, they've said it's like an unathletic cast. It's not like a cast we're kind of made to be out there. It is a nerdy, gamey cast of characters. And I love that because that's how I would be. And I love watching that.
It is the perfect cast for US Survivor season. I think you've got a mixed bag of just about everything. And you've got a lot of people that will go through struggles, which is what you want. And like the final thing really is, if you're a producer, you're putting people out there, you want a reaction to every single person. It's like wrestling. It doesn't matter if it's a negative reaction or a positive reaction. The only thing that matters is, are you talking about these players and are they getting a reaction? And I think I feel that for every single person there.
I don't know that there's anyone I feel neutral about, truly. That's incredible. That, like, that's well done, because you have to know them well enough to have a feeling about them, and then you have to care enough to have, again, a feeling in any direction. So
yes, it is exactly what you
impressive.
Want.
Impressive. Yeah, they've done well. Well, let's try and award some points on the chizzy. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right, I'll go first because I know we're both struggling. So, well, I mean, I genuinely, like, I was calling my brother, like, panicked right before this podcast. Like, I still can't decide.
Yeah, I have no idea. Let's just throw out random points.
Well, okay, I know. I feel very strong on the 3 to Jonathan, because I really do feel that he is so central. Truly the heart of the tribe, as was described. That everything in the secret scenes from last week manifested into the power of this episode this week. And I wanted to give him points for it last week. And now I feel good about the fact that I can't, like, it was a part of the show itself. And I can. And I feel like, as much as they all had their reasons to keep Marianne, like the fact that he felt so strongly about it and does seem so central to me, that's the 3 points. And if they do go to another tribal council and an idol somehow gets played or Shot in the Dark gets played, like it'll be to me his swing vote between the 3. Like I feel like he's the center of the 3, the relationship with Omar, the relationship with Lindsay. If this tribe were to get down to one person, it would be him. And that's often what I try and reward in these like fast paced small tribes of the pre-merge. So I'm giving him 3 points. I'll give 2 to Omar because of that unlikely bromance, which again, we saw them both speak, you know, so well, kind of like Jonathan talked about it, like this kind of complementary relationship. He's also super powerful. He had his own reasons for keeping Marianne, as we talked about. The whole alliance is great. Yeah, and Mariah said the reason she played her Shot in the Dark was she was kind of tipped off by Lindsay and then Jonathan. So the fact that he's left out of that of the three, give him some points for that. And then the one and the honorable mention I really struggled with because more people deserve points this week. I'll give the one to Lindsay because I feel like, I mean, the focus was on the bromance, so I'll give them the three and the two. But the tight three is doing so well, and it just felt wrong to give to Jonathan and Omar and not to Lindsay when she was also doing so much. Like, they were all really doing it together. They're making those decisions together. They are so social. Like, I feel really good about that three of everyone as we're talking about moving through long-term in the game. So for her to be so social and the things that I love that she's doing socially and working with that so well, I had to give it a point. But then I have to give an honorable mention to Daniel, who I feel is totally point-worthy. Like, without being able to leave out the Taku three, there was nothing I could do, but, like, it's not even just that he has good future plans, I feel, that could hopefully manifest into points. Like, I felt he did a lot well in this actual episode. Like, the fact that Mike came to him in the first place and the way that he received that and the fact that Mike is reading that wrong to me, that's a lot of credit to Daniel getting Mike not to say the phrase, as you're saying, to probably, like, a mutual benefit everyone right now. But he's, like, controlling that. He seems really connected just kind of all around. Really just approachable, consolidating stuff with Chanel in that and giving her that information. So doing so much well, but I couldn't go past the three and I couldn't leave any of them out. So those are my points. And Swathi as well, I would say, like, I think you're, as you're saying, like, the most successful person on Ika so far. And that's probably correct. So did that give any direction for you? Do you still feel confused about the two?
Yeah, I feel like I am in the same boat because it's like I've got like six people and probably the same sort of six people that I want to give points to. Like, it's John, Omar, and Lindsay all deserve points. Daniel deserves points. Swati as well. Jenny as well, I think, is in a very good spot, and I think she is pulling in information from a lot of people and has been good. I think Omar I'm going to give my 3 points to because I'm backing him to be in the best position in the trial. 2 and 1 points is hard. I really feel like Daniel deserves points for.
No, that was so tough.
He's thinking outside the box. So I'm sorry to the other players, but I'm going to give 2 points to Daniel.
Yeah, that's good. I'm
just
glad
because
you're getting
I think it's creative and I like that. And it's not just creative gameplay. It is creative gameplay that is serving himself so well. Like, he's using it to actually build up his alliance, but he's also building his alliance with Mike, who he's technically kind of betraying, and he's still managing to build that alliance at the same time, which is ridiculous to think about. And so 1 point I'm going to give to Lindsay because I think Lindsay is in the better position than John. I think John is playing great, and I wish I could give him points, but I think Lindsay is pushing it a little bit harder and is in a bit of a better spot. So I'm going to give her 1 point.
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting charts. We have 9 people of 18 on the board, 9 of 15 still in the game. That's amazing. Rob's fact check is going to have to get on that, but that might be a record 2 weeks in. Like, that, there's been a very even spread. So Omar has won the Chizzy this week and has jumped to the top of the leaderboard on 5 points. Romeo on 4 from last week. Drea is on 3 from last week. Jonathan is on 3 from this week. And then we've got a bunch of people on 2. So Swathi is on 2. Lindsay's now on 2. Daniel's on 2. And Jenny is on 1. I gave Jenny a point last week, and I do agree that, you know, she's still doing really well. Maybe the worst part of that is being aligned to Mike, who may at some point shoot himself in the foot, and, like, that's her partner. But I still think I've got, you know, a lot of high hopes for Jenny. So that's really interesting. I feel like that feels right. Like, so many people getting praised and getting points without one person necessarily, like, massively standing out, as we're seeing, like, in Australian Survivor right now. It's like a runaway train. That feels right for the season, I feel.
Yeah, I don't think you can really split apart a lot of people. There's a lot of good gameplay, and even the people we don't get to see enough, part of it is because they are stable and solid. Like, Jenny is just a stable, solid player, and I think we might not see a lot of her until she's really either pushing or on the bottom. So just because we've got such a big cast of characters, but I hope we do see more of it because she's actually one of my favorites in terms of the gameplay I've seen.
I mean, I gave her a point last week for the stability, for taking the out at Chipwil Island, and just for kind of leading with the triangle so well. I love her stability. She's just got like a great head on her shoulders, and you can already see it. So
yeah,
very excited
to be
that
chill. Yeah, to be that chill at the equivalent of, like, you know, a final six. Like, it is the equivalent of that. You have no room to move. So to have calmness and sensibility in that position is great.
I love how even it is, how fun. Anyway, let's get to the questions. So Talking DV says, if Marianne were an ice cream flavor, what would she be? I'll expand this out. Are there any characters who jump out as ice cream flavors to you?
I actually said this, I think, yesterday. Marianne is not an ice cream. Marianne is like lemonade or Sprite or something like that. Like, she is just 100% sugar and bubbles.
I love sugar. Makes sense. I have so much sugar in my tea. It's super unhealthy. So I get it. And I love Marianne. Makes sense.
So I'm saying she's lemonade.
Mm-hmm. And then is there anyone? I mean, I feel like there's no vanilla. That's what we're saying. But like, if there's anyone else jump out to you as like an ice cream flavor.
Well, I mean, I can be a vegan flavor.
Yeah. So here we go. We'll give it back to him.
Yeah. With like coconut milk. We'll make it a tropical vegan flavor, so it can be like pineapple and coconut and cashew. Good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who else. I don't know. I feel like, what are the ice cream flavors? Chocolate. I'm like, I'm not good at this.
Yeah, no one is boring. Like, yeah, no one is boring at all. And so I think, like, if you were throwing out random like flavors, like you've got Romeo. So Romeo could be like rose flavored or rose water flavored. So that's pretty cool. That's
interesting.
And then a couple of these would be more chaotic. Mike is the kid that drops his ice cream about 4 seconds after you give it to him, and they like go for one lick and it falls off the cone.
Yeah. if people aren't leaving this podcast hungry, then we're not doing our job. That's fine. Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah. Everyone just deserves like crazy ice creams with like sprinkles and cereal on top, or like bizarre, like coffee and tea flavors, things like that. That's what I would give to them if I had the time.
Nice. Well, Logan Bits asks, with Chanel and Tori both playing different games before this, how would you compare ORGs and shorter games to Survivor? So Tori played Sequester, and I think Chanel's like big in the ORG community, and I know that you play and succeed in a lot of ORGs and get really far. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I've been successful in one. I've won one before.
Well, that's it. How many more do you need to win? You did it. It's done.
Once you won one and you play Survivor, it gets a little bit hard to win ever again.
That's fair.
But they're completely different games. Like ORGs, you have way less motivations to actually push people in a certain direction. Like everything is just about winning, really. Whereas Survivor, you have all those different motivations. You have time with people. There is no time in an ORG. So I think, like, to me, like, there's just so much more depth to Survivor. Like, you see people, like, real and, like, vulnerable, and you really have to push your own self and work at it 24 hours a day before you can actually put plans in place. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the real difference, is just the depth. And ORGs, you're just gunning for it just immediately, and you really have not a lot to go on. You just kind of have to trust your gut and just shoot for the end.
I mean, for Tori, is there anything in having played a game that's so much more gamey that makes that approach to socially connecting a little bit less authentic?
I think it's detrimental.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is detrimental to do the ORG first, because the ORG is basically enforcing the ideas that a lot of fans, myself included, have, like where you think you're going to go in and it's going to be all strategy and everyone is going to be thinking the same as you with strategy 24/7. And it's like the opposite. And it's like, no one wants to talk strategy 24/7. Like, people want to talk about themselves and listen to you and all that sort of thing. So I think it does enforce a lot of the bad behaviors that Survivor fans can get into when they start playing and overplaying, which might be why Tori got into a little bit of hot water and hasn't necessarily made the social connections as well.
Yeah, I think to do an ice cream analogy, like, you want that the ORG skills to be like sprinkled on top, but not like the actual treat itself, because like for Chanel, we haven't seen enough of her gameplay, but like if she's aware of the fact that like there are skills there, there's a hope that you could kind of really work your head around the strategy like Daniel is doing. All right, like let me have this as a tool I can use in small situations, but not have it be the whole way that I approach the game. Then I think that's probably the way that you want to do it.
Yeah, it is. It's the sizzle, not the steak. Mm-hmm. It is the sprinkles, not the ice cream.
Yeah. Josh Kettle says, what's a more unnecessary lie? Lying and saying you have a kid or lying about being a therapist? Now, I feel like these could not be more opposite lies. Like, one of them was, like, a huge lie that you did for gain, but was, like, it was a massive lie. Like, you know, like, you did it for a reason, but it kind of, like, it went... there's a huge risk in that. It's kind of like the Marianne. It's like the high risk, high reward. The therapist thing is so small that it feels unnecessary. So I feel like these are opposite trajectories of life. And maybe don't do either.
I think don't do either. But yeah, mine was definitely high risk, high reward. Whereas like, I don't think you have a lot to gain. I don't think anyone is intimidated by a therapist. Like maybe if it was like some elite level psychologist that they like, said they were like criminal psychologists or something like that, then I'd be like, oh, okay, they're going to always have the right read, so I'm never going to be allowed to lie to them, which kind of stops my fluidity. But below that, like, I mean, the therapist is more about facilitating people rather than like psychoanalyzing them necessarily. At least that's my understanding of it. It's more you're a facilitator of people healing themselves.
Yeah, definitely.
Do I have the right interpretation of that?
Like you're trying to help people, like that should be a good thing. But I think that the worry is like, well, they'll know that I can like really understand them. It's like, well, not if they don't give you that understanding. Like therapists don't like extract it from you, like with, you know, some sort of truth serum, which, you know, Tori would appreciate because that's what happens in Harry Potter.
But I think, it's like a passive versus a active interrogation sort of. That's a big difference.
I mean, look, if you lie about your profession, you're definitely showing how much you rate your own profession. That's the thing. But it's kind of like what they say, like no one's thinking about you as much as you think about yourself or about people thinking about you. Like, thinking about like, how they analyze you as a therapist, but they're not thinking, like, even on Survivor, like they're not thinking as much about your career as you think.
Yeah. No one cares that much.
But I was saying this to my brother the other day. Because we're so used to Australian Survivor, from like beyond the gameplay, like from a storytelling perspective, on Australian Survivor, it's like all we'll know about a person is their career. Like literally, all you'll know about a whole character 20 episodes in is like they're a pilot. You know, like that's the thing. Whereas like with a lot of these people, I feel like I know them intimately, but then have to like think about like what is their job? Like, hi, I know a lot about him. Like he's like a data analyst, or like Marianne, she's I think a student, but like. That's definitely like the 10th thing for me that comes to mind. It is such an interesting about face from Australian Survivor where it's like, this is like the headline of that person forever. Like that's just, it's just such a disparity. It's so interesting to watch.
I mean, this is me just falling into the exact same trap as Tori. So I'm immediately like apologizing in advance, but I think Lindsay being a dietitian, like I'm a dietitian myself, and I feel like that's more dangerous because a dietitian, we're kind of used to getting people that have low motivation to do something and seeing if we can find a way to either motivate them to do it or work around the issue, which has a lot more parallels to Survivor than a therapist necessarily. I guess there is a bit of like, there's quite a lot of crossover there, but specifically as the dietitian, I feel like you do have that in at least some niches. End of the day, no one really cares unless you're some real, real high end occupation.
Unless you're a Survivor podcaster, but now I'm doing it to myself.
No one cares about that as well. It's like Nick in All Stars thought he was going to get roasted because he'd done a Survivor podcast before. And it's like, no one cared.
To be fair, that was with the All-Star cast. Probably most of them were like, they're a Survivor podcast. Like, you've been on several of them. I interviewed you. We did an exit interview. What are you talking about? Like, oh, I didn't know that they were Survivor podcast. Like, that really works for Australian Survivor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, especially when it's like, for most people, you do your interviews in one day of just like 12 hours straight and you have no idea who's interviewed you by the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely some people that Nick had actively spoken to on All-Stars, I truly believe wouldn't have known that Survivor podcast existed, or that Nick had done them.
That he'd interviewed them before.
No, That's not like a joke. That must be true.
It is true.
That's great. Australian Survivor is really something else. Last question. Phil Nguyen wants to know, who is your winner pick? I will say these winner picks become less and less valid as we move through the season. But if, I don't know if you had a preseason one or if you want to give one now, it absolutely won't count. But who is your pick?
It doesn't count. Why doesn't it count?
From episode 2, you've seen 2 hours. Did you have one preseason?
What? Do you think I read into the edit that much?
No, I mean, I gave one preseason. I hadn't even met any of these people. Like, you have so much more information to go on. It's fine. Yeah. It counts as an episode 2 winner pick. It's fine.
All right. Well, I can either pick Jenny or Omar.
Mm.
I'm just going to go with Omar. I mean, I gave him my votes for playing well, so I'm just going to back Omar.
Omar was my pick.
I'll take Jenny then.
No, I'm not doing this. This is what happened with in the preseason.
You're just like, come on.
No, it's fine.
Get on the bandwagon. It's get fine on the bandwagon. Because there's heaps of room on it.
Preseason, I had Mike Bloom on the podcast for Australian Survivor. He says Shay. I'm like, I picked Shay on Talking Tribal earlier this week. He's like, well, then I'll go with Jordy. I'm like, no, we're not switching. It's fine. You'll also have Shay. Then he wanted to have both. And I'm like, anyway, it's been an ongoing thing. It's been a real issue in our friendship, but we're persevering. Well,
if there's room on the wagon for Omar, I'll hop on with you.
Hop on the Omar train. We can do better with that. What are we, Omar stans? We've got to do better. What's the name for Omar stans or Omar Winnipeg people? I'm really bad at coming up with names today. I said Mary Zach.
I think get people to comment it on Twitter and
let me know.
If we can get like a Omar pun or Omar Team Omar.
Yeah, Tima.
I don't know. I'm sure we'll come up with something amazing like the second that we jump on.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's going to kill me. If I think about it, I'm going to edit it into the podcast before I send it.
Australian Survivor. Just put like a Frankenbite into the thing.
Why was this podcast so delayed? Exactly. Why did this come out days later? It's because I've been thinking about it for 5 days and now I've only released the podcast when I could come up with something and edit it in.
Edited Harry's words together into the sentence that made the Omar team name.
Well, now it's just Team Omar, right? We couldn't do better than that. And
okay,
it's not very good, but you know, we can't all have as many nicknames and stuff as Hurricane Harry, so we're just gonna have to keep it at Zach and Team Omar. We did great with naming things today. But Harry, this has been really fun to break it all down. Where can people find you on social media? I see you've been tweeting a little bit about it as well, so where can they follow your thoughts?
Yeah, I tweet sometimes.
That's the perfect amount. Twitter needs to be the sprinkles, but not the ice cream. Yeah. That's probably what it is.
Yes. So I think I don't even know my Twitter handle, but
I'm pretty sure it's Harry Hills 18 because they just tagged you. And I was like, why 18? And then I had that
thought. I don't know. I think it's just the one that Twitter told me to take. So I just listened to it because I'm old, as we've discussed.
What are you, the 18th Harry Hills?
Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
So,
there you go.
Like, not that original. But Harry the Ice Cream Guy.
You are Harry Hills 18. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay. And Instagram, that's not really doing Survivor stuff on Instagram.
Nah, Instagram's dead.
Mm. Fair enough. Well, follow at Harry Hills 18. Keep an eye out for our dating podcast coming soon. As you can tell, we're going to have to come up with a name for that. And I'm not doing it right now because clearly we're all out of creative ideas. You do an ice cream.
And if John and Lindsay, if anything happens, I call it first.
Harry, that's not.
Come on.
That's not a prediction. Like that's literally, this is the Tories. You know, you watch Harry Potter take of love bets. Like, it's clear. 79% of people have voted that that's what's going to happen. Like, that's not a take.
Everyone
like,
thinks John and Lindsay are into each other.
I'll be shocked if they don't get together. Like, that to me will, like, come on. Surely. I mean, hard eyes all around. I mean, we as matchmakers can see that that is just a... I don't know. I know nothing, okay? I don't want to do the love thing. I want to do the Survivor thing. This is my career. Please. Please don't make me go into matchmaking. But if you want more of the Survivor analysis and none of the matchmaking, follow me at Shannon Gates. Subscribe to the International Survivor Happens feed. So much going on. Australian Survivor stuff is happening. I had Wei on to talk about week 7. Tessa next week talking about week 8. Talking Tribal every week as well, and exits every week happening. Template articles, a lot of them about US Survivor, so follow me for all of that content.
You are so busy.
So much. I have a job. That's a fun thing. Separate to Survivor. Yeah, and I'm doing, obviously, US Survivor stuff. Next week is actually a really fun one. I won't have a guest because what we're doing is the Survivor Global Stockwatch crossover spectacular. So Taryn Armstrong does a Survivor Stockwatch in RHAP. I do Survivor Global. We're going to combine our podcasts like Jetsons meets the Flintstones type crossover, like when Friends and Mad About You did a crossover. We're going to do the Chizzy. We're going to do the Stockwatch. It's going to be super fun. Really excited about that. I'm also on Memo. I want to thank everyone who has sent in requests because I'm having so much fun with that, and getting messages about people who care enough for me to create personalized content for them is genuinely been so fun. But yeah, that's pretty much all that I'm doing. It's been a crazy couple of months. Good time though, you know, wouldn't have it any other way. I also wanted to say that the Survivor Improv that is happening at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, I have a discount code for that, RHAP. So put in that discount code, and that's happening through April. Just go to the Melbourne Comedy Festival website and look for Survivor Improv. And yeah, I'm hoping to be able to go to that when I go to Melbourne in April. So exciting stuff happening there. But Harry, thank you so much. This is why you're the cockroach of the podcast, because we can break it down, always have such a good time, and I will continuously make sure that you are on the podcast. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we had a fun time. So check out all of that content. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you again, Harry. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will see you for the crossover spectacular next week. Bye.
Bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
The adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.